Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Osiris.
Welcome to Wheels Off, a show about the messy reality of the creative life. I'm Rhett Miller. That's when it got wheels off. Started up and we ain't gonna stop. Oh, she made me feel like a god. That's when it got wheels off. Brennan Lee is a musician's musician, a songwriter's songwriter, a flat picker's flat picker. There's a reason so many songwriters love her songs and cover her songs. There's a reason so many of us admire her musicianship. She's just the real deal. She has a new record, Ain't Through Honky Tonkin' Yet, coming out in June, and a great catalog that came before that. Talking to her from her home in Nashville, on her back porch with a rooster piping up throughout the interview. She's literally rocking in a rocking chair the whole time we have the conversation you're about to hear. She's great, and I'm really glad that I was able to pick her brain and share the resulting wisdom with you Wheels Off listeners. I know you're going to enjoy this. I'm really grateful that I got to meet Brennan. I'd never spoken to her before, and what a treat. That's why I love doing Wheels Off, and I'm really grateful that you guys keep listening and giving me reason to keep doing it. It's fantastic. Thank you so much. Please welcome to Wheels Off, Brennan Lee. Welcome to Wheels Off, Brennan Lee. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me. Been looking forward to this.
Oh, that's so sweet. From for the edification of our listeners, from where are you logging in?
Right now, I'm in Nashville, Tennessee.
Nice. And it looks like you're outdoors or semi-outdoors.
It's a beautiful day. It's garden planting time. Getting it in a little late this year, but
better late than never. I'm in the Hudson Valley of New York, and it's also beautiful here. It's back porch painting weather.
Oh, wonder, do you paint?
I mean, I'm being forced to paint the back porch today.
It's not like your tour de force. It's just the porch.
I'm not bringing an easel onto the back porch with a canvas.
Sounds really nice though.
So congrats on the new record and its imminent release.
Thank you.
Are you so excited?
Very excited. It's very exciting.
Oh, dude.
You know how it is.
You make
something and you get to share it with people, and it's a gift.
And, I think most disciplines have this, maybe painting doesn't, I don't know, but there's a lag time. Like you must've finished this record a few months back, right? I'm guessing.
We finished it over the course of a year. We started it last January, not this January, but the January before. So we've been working on it for a little while now. We just had a few last overdubs. We overdubbed the Harmony Quartet thing.
Yeah.
I hope that doesn't continue. Sometimes it goes for a while.
It's nice. It's nice color.
I brought in the recording of a rooster just to make myself sound country and authentic. It was very expensive. I'm rambling. We just had the pleasure of having a little time to finish this one. So
nice. That thing does happen, though, where once it gets finished and it's in the can, but you have to wait for it to come out. How do you deal with that lag time? Because it can be pretty difficult mentally.
You know, this is a new practice for me, but someone gave me some advice some years ago, and basically it was just keep hitting them with more records. So if I finish something and then, you know, the label wants to wait a little while to put it out, or I've got, you know, legwork to do, I just start something else.
Nice. So well, given that, what creative project are you working on right now, and how does it light you up?
I have two in my head at the moment, and neither of them has been technically started, but one of them is kind of it's got cowgirl vibes. It's kind of that. I love the cowboy music from the 1940s and 50s, kind of the Hollywood cowboy stuff. Yeah. Sons of the Pioneers and Roy Rogers and Marty Robbins and even like Patsy Montana and the whole genre that could be the big, wide, very vague genre that could be described as cowboy. Yeah. I love that idea, but I want to put it in the context of my own life, put the songs in the context of what my own life is, or a modern person.
Yeah.
And then the other idea I really want to pursue is, you know, I grew up with bluegrass, and I want to make a proper bluegrass record.
Would you play mandolin? Would you be the mandolinist?
Maybe.
Would you be flat picking? Would you do all of it?
If I find someone better, then I might not, you know. I'm in Nashville, so it's an embarrassment of riches around here.
God, it really is. So you grew up in North Dakota, right?
I was born in Fargo, North Dakota, and I grew up right across the state line in Minnesota. So
sure.
I'm from both places.
I don't think people realize how beautiful. I mean, I grew up in the South in Texas, and we used to go spend the summers in Brainerd.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where in Texas did you grow up?
Dallas.
Okay. Yeah. I know it well.
But so people in Dallas don't realize. I'd say I'm going to Brainerd, Minnesota, and they'd be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And I was like, well, it's actually really beautiful.
I mean, and I say this as being a part Texan.
Uh-huh.
Like, I am part Texan now. I lived there for 15 years.
Oh, wow.
Texans can be rude about other people's places.
Yeah.
They will say, oh, I'm sorry. Or, you know, you got out as fat. Why were you, you know? Well, actually, Minnesota is God's country.
Yeah.
Especially somewhere like Brainerd. It's just wonderful. But don't tell anyone.
Too late.
Yeah, we're on the air. But it is really a great place. It's kind of Norman Rockwell place to grow up.
Yeah. But I wonder about growing up there. And I don't think people realize that it's kind of cowboy country too out there. But for you, did you always know you were going to do music? Did you always know you were going to write songs? Was there an epiphany moment that you can recall?
Well, as a, like a kid, I liked poetry. I liked, English poetry, and I liked American poetry. I liked poetry that rhymed most of all. I liked Yeats.
Yeah.
I liked Shakespeare. I liked Christina Rossetti, and I liked Tennyson. And, I didn't know how I could fit that into, I couldn't imagine myself as an adult poet. Like, is that, that's an extinct profession. It doesn't exist anymore. You know, and then in my teens, I started playing music. My brother and I had a duo. We traveled around in our teens and played country music and bluegrass, and it kind of came together. I don't know why it never occurred to me I could be a songwriter. It just kind of happened. So started writing really bad songs in my teens, because that's what you do, is you start with being really bad. And I wrote a lot of bad songs. And then, you know, it turned out I never knew any other life. I was just, well, this is what I do now. Never got a job. Just kind of went with it.
I'm so glad you made the point, because I do think it's so useful, especially for young artists starting out, to hear that you, when you start, you're going to be bad by necessity.
And I can't imagine now, like I'm old enough that I just missed the put everything on YouTube as soon as you're learning it era. So there's, you know, the embarrassing stuff of me is on VHS somewhere, if that. So I didn't, you know, the pressure to share everything and perform everything as soon as you learn it must be pretty intense. Now, I mean, I learned in my parents' basement. I learned in bars, and no one had a video camera. You're going to be bad. I made some bad music. I wrote some bad songs. That's part of the process. You don't get to skip that.
Well, it's funny. I hadn't really thought about that with regards to the technological advancements, if they are advancements. The idea that those early years are captured, or even worse, like you feel beholden to share them with the world, like this is how you gain followers. So do kids now get even the option to suck for a while in private?
I mean, I would hope so. I would hope that you, I really don't know, but
yeah,
the need to get likes and followers. I mean, even as an established, I mean, as established as I am performer, I feel that.
Yeah.
And they must, I know they do.
It's a disaster. Well, so I wonder about that, because right, the likes and followers phenomenon is definitely something that creates inner turmoil and bad feelings for us artists, probably for anyone, period, but certainly for people that live and die by public adulation or whatever. For you, when you encounter the negative voices in your own head, the sort of self-generated obstacles that keep you from writing your best song, being your best self, what have you figured out as a way to get through that?
Well, I feel confident about my writing, and I kind of, in the sense that, like, I have a process that I've always used for determining whether something is worth playing for people or not. And it's, if I feel good enough about it, I'll just play it for people and I'll test it out and I'll see how people react to it. And if they don't seem to react to it well, I'll retire it. And it's kind of no skin off my back. It's just like, okay, well, that one didn't work. But if, you know, if I feel strongly enough about it and it's close to my heart, I'll just keep playing it, because ultimately you have to be okay with your own. You have to be okay with what you're putting out. You can't just base it on the reaction that other people might have.
Yeah.
If I love it, chances are other people will too. That's kind of my rule. It's not always the case, but
it's an interesting distinction, because it comes up a lot in these conversations that if you try to manipulate the creation of your art to make somebody else happy, like if you're calculating as you're creating, typically it, you know, winds up in a failure or something that stinks of desperation or something. But once it's done, you can focus group it without feeling like you're compromising the creative self. Right. Does that make sense?
Right. Like, you can beat yourself again. You can beat yourself up over, are people going to like this? And should I make this kind of record? And should I? And like, really, you're not going to know, for one. But I mean, I figured this out when I made, it took me a while, but I made this record, Prairie Love Letter, mm-hmm. in 2020, I guess. And it was the most, in my mind, uncommercial thing I could have done.
Yeah.
It was this record about North Dakota. And it's about, I mean, the whole record is like about the people I grew up around, the Norwegian farmers. It's an, you know, as culture, like American culture is at, like, in general, it's an irrelevant culture. Like, no one cares to, there's no one, the only mainstream references to this culture that I grew up in, it was like Prairie Home Companion and the movie Fargo. And so just like not really that hot button, if you will. But I thought, damn it, I was just like over it. It's like, you know, I'm going to make something I like. And if no one likes it, if it sells 10 copies, whatever. And I made it. And ironically, it ended up being like the thing that helped, like actually took my career to a more sustainable level for me. And I figured it out. Like, I'm never again going to do anything thinking about anyone else artistically. I'm just going to do whatever the hell I want to. Because if you're enjoying yourself, people will enjoy themselves when they hear what you're making.
And I feel like there's such a great lesson in there. There's a couple of great lessons in there. But one of them is the idea that the specific is sometimes more universal than what you think would be universal.
You put that really well.
Thanks.
I think because broad strokes, I guess as my old publisher friend, Bobby Reimer would say, broad strokes or I think he calls it broad strokes, like more general kind of like that can appeal, but ironically, like you said, the more specific, oh, you think this story's only happened to me. Like no one's going to relate to this. And the more personal it gets, sometimes the more people come out of the woodwork and go, that was, you know, that's like that song feels like it's about my grandfather, or, you know, or me, or people are, we're very much the same as each other.
Yeah. And so if you find something that's just this tiny little nugget of your life and it's real and it feels really real, that's going to land more than something that's like a bromide, like a big sweeping broad strokes, as your publisher would say.
Did you ever know David Olney?
That's super familiar. Who is he?
He was a wonderful songwriter and actor in Nashville. He was one of the first people I knew here, and he passed away a couple of years ago, I guess around 2020. I think it was 2020. It was in January. But the first time I met him, I had a lovely conversation with him. And I can't remember. We were on this topic and he said to me, I never forgot this. He said, if everybody likes it, how good could it really be? Yeah.
Amen.
So it's okay to find your people. Like if your audience is not the average, you know, the big part of the bell curve, like that's okay. Cause people we're nuanced. There's more, you know, there's all kinds.
I love that. And it's so funny. So when I ask how you deal with the sort of negative inner voices and you said, I'm confident. Like, I wonder, was this preternatural? Were you born confident? Was it a hard-won confidence?
Yeah, I'm confident about my songs, my singing and my playing. And sadly, I'll have to admit, it's probably because I've been validated about it.
Yeah, that helps.
Because I'm very not confident about some certain other things, you know. But my songs, it's like, okay, well, that's the thing I know I can do. Maybe that's normal. You know, everyone's got kind of a thing that's like, well, yeah, I know I can do that. I don't know. I think it's validation. It's probably external validation has made me confident.
But maybe even it's the thing of when you start as a kid or whatever, and you look and you see the people watching you and you see whatever it is, the response, the joy in their face, the, you know, that's the immediate validation that then snowballs and pushes us to do this thing that we do. Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, maybe if I hadn't gotten that kind of validation, I would be like a teacher or something now. I would have a different career choice.
What would you teach?
I like English, but I didn't, you know, I'm a high school graduate, so I would need to completely reorganize my life if I wanted to do something like that. But yeah, the English language, I mean, it's endlessly interesting.
Do you think people that get an honorary degree are then allowed to go teach?
I have no idea.
I'm just wondering.
How does one gain an honorary degree?
They're always giving them to like the celebrity that comes back and does the valid or the the graduation speech, commencement speech.
I need one of those.
I need one of those too. But then can I turn around and get like a real job with benefits?
Can I do a commencement speech if I never commenced?
Exactly.
If I never graduated, am I allowed to?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
Talk to kids about graduating? Because
yeah,
I'm not sure I regret it. I don't regret it.
No, God, no. Did you go to college at all and then drop out? Or were you just like, no way?
For a minute, I went to Texas State.
No way.
Yeah.
Is Texas State formerly East Texas?
It used to be Southwest Texas State.
That's right. Okay.
And then they changed.
Got you. I had a girlfriend that went there when it was Southwest Texas State. Beautiful rivers.
Yeah, same.
Floating on the rivers. So you were there like what, like one semester?
Like 1 year. Yeah, like two semesters I was there.
Okay, cool. So you knew, you tried it.
I mean, I was already working was the thing.
Yeah.
I already had my path and, you know, my very generous parents were like, you should try college. But they have always been supportive of my career. So they kind of knew it was like in the way. It was not a priority for me. I liked being in Texas. That was kind of how I got there. It was my brother and I moved and we both went to Texas State for a minute. But I think I was intruding on their generosity a little.
Faking it.
Yeah. I didn't become very acclimated into the student body because I was always working.
Did you agonize over it? The idea of like the normal life that you, the path you should follow, the, you know, your parents, as you say, their generosity and sending you there. Was there a lot of agonizing feeling like the should of it all? I should do this. I should do that. Or did you felt the pull?
Well, you know, you probably know this, the thing you miss is like, normal stuff sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, you know that Tom T. Hall song, The Homecoming? Mm-hmm. That's like my favorite song because I can't listen to it without choking up because he's, you know, for those that don't know it, it's a one-sided conversation between him and his dad. And his dad's like still this country guy, and you can just see him sitting on the porch talking to his dad. And he's missed his mother's funeral and he's missed, you know, he's just like no longer a part of the community. He's just off playing all the time. And he's like saying he's lost a little weight. And he's like, it's just a hard life that he's chosen, but he's missing things. He's missing regular human, you know, small town things in his case. I really miss that sort of thing. Like someone telling me, oh, hey, we're having a birthday party for your, you know, your great aunt or whatever. And it's next Saturday. It's like, well, I can't spur of the moment show up on a Saturday, and I do grieve that. So if you're going to invite me to something, like make sure it's like 6 months in advance.
But that is funny. That's especially for a touring musician, we give up so much of that, being present in the lives of our extended family, our immediate family. It's a giant sacrifice. Does it feel like that to you? Do you feel like you're sacrificing, or do you feel like you have no option?
Oh,
like,
for sure. I'm making that sacrifice. You know, I miss everybody. If everybody's at home doing something, it's like, oh, dang, I'm the only one that's not there, you know, but I'm lucky because my mom was a stewardess.
Nice.
Flight attendant.
Yeah.
And then a customer service agent. And so like she,
which airline?
Yeah, my folks at Delta.
Nice. My mom was customer service at American Airlines.
Oh, so you know the deal. Like they have a little freedom where they can fly.
Non-rev, baby.
Yeah, my parents can fly and see me.
Nice.
So they do fly and see me pretty often. My brother does too. So.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it's very nice.
So we've spent a little bit of time traveling back to the post-teenage years when the world is sort of laid out in front of you and all the doors are open. I wonder if you would mind trying to put yourself back. Imagine you're running into a 21-year-old version of yourself in today's world, unfortunately, or Well, I won't put a judgment on it. In today's world, 21-year-old you, what advice do you give yourself?
Probably don't worry so much. Because things are going to like go the way that they're going to go. You know, I wasted a lot of time and kind of like didn't know what I wanted and didn't know, you know, didn't go for my career like I maybe should have. I see a lot of 21 to 30 year olds now. And I look at them and I'm like, wow, they're really driven and really like focused, and they have access to information that I didn't have too. They kind of have online communities. I mean, but at the same time, I don't think I would have been okay with being like famous at 22. Because I wasn't really making the music I wanted to make. I wasn't the artist yet that I wanted to be. I mean, are we ever? But I don't know. I think I would have probably just said, don't worry so much.
Did you worry a lot?
I'm kind of a worrier, yeah. Yeah. Worry about other people, you know, that kind of thing.
I like the point you made. It's something I think about a lot. I wonder if it's changing. I feel like the world is giving artists the leeway to grow up. Like I remember when I dropped out of college, part of my driving force was the idea that when you turn 30, they eject you from rock and roll or whatever. Like
that's so dumb.
I know, right? But I do feel like that was a belief that was held in the late 80s, at least, or up until the late 80s. But I do feel like now we let artists, maybe it's just musicians, but we let, you know, maybe it goes to other disciplines as well, but we let people grow into their talent. And I do think we get better all the time.
Yeah, I think we do too. And I mean, probably counts for everybody, but mostly, you know, definitely for women. You know, been playing professionally since my teens, and they tell you, there's always people that come out of the woodwork and tell you like, well, you better hurry up and strike while the iron's hot, because, you know, once you're not a dewy fresh little nymph anymore, you know, you turn 30 or whatever, no one's going to want your music. And what a terrible thing to say. And it's also, it's not true.
Yeah.
Because stuff started happening for me. I felt like in a way substantial, in a significant way when I was like 36.
Yeah. I had a manager about 15 years ago, to the point that maybe it could happen to guys as well. But I had a manager 15 years ago tell me, in, you know, very seriously, you need to have a hit on this record because this is your last record to be where you're going to be cute.
Oh my gosh. Whatever. Yeah, you know, I know I feel like I had elder male, you know, advisors definitely tell me that.
So gross.
It's like, dude, you are like, this guy was, I don't know how old, a lot older than me. I was like, you don't know if I'm 30 or 40 or 50. Like, you can't even tell. Like, that's the thing. I think people want something human and real, and especially in country music.
Yeah.
They don't want you to look like a Barbie. They're not my fans.
Yeah.
Those aren't my fans anyway, those people.
Exactly. And I wonder about the idea of having a hit. The you had said, I'm glad I didn't have success when I was in my early 20s because my stuff wasn't as good, or I hadn't figured out who I wanted to be musically, right? But I wonder if, and there's stories I tell myself to make myself feel better about never having had a hit, right? If it calcifies you in that moment, and everybody wants the person that broke through in that moment.
Right. If you're always going to be remembered for that thing.
Yeah.
I think about this John Hartford quote all the time where he said, never become famous for something you don't like doing.
Yes.
It's like, really? You could. I mean, if you had a novelty hit or something that was kind of knuckleheaded,
yeah,
that's
You're going to get recognized in the HEB as being the guy that sang the song about the, you know. Yeah, figure out who you are, because I had nothing to say when I was 22. I really didn't. And most people don't.
Yeah. It's like rare.
Mostly if you're 22, you kind of haven't really had anything happen to you yet. Most people haven't. Like, I had a breakup. It was the only breakup anyone ever had. It was really sad. Like, that's me at 22, you know? And that, there are exceptions to that, but mostly I think, my goodness, life experience is really useful for songwriting.
Yeah. Well, I'm so excited for the new record. I'm glad you ain't through honky tonkin'.
Never.
Boy, how many freaking articles that talk about the new record or your upcoming visit to their town are going to, well, that's, you asked for it by making that the album title.
I'm going to say Brennan Lee ain't through honky tonkin' yet or whatever.
Exactly.
That's fine.
Man, it's so cool. Well, I'm so glad I got to talk with you. I really appreciate the wisdom that you've shared. I think people are going to love it.
Thanks for doing the, you know, doing the work and being smart and asking good questions.
Well, it's easy. It's easy to talk to you. I hope our paths cross soon in real life, and good luck out there on the road.
Well, same. I hope I get to hear you in person sometime soon too.
Let's share a bill.
Let's get
paid to hang out.
I'd love that. Thank you. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks, Brennan. Take care.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to Wheels Off. Please be sure to rate and review the show on iTunes. That helps us appear higher in the search results and lets other folks know that it's a cool podcast to listen to. Also, as the kids say, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or anywhere else that you listen to shows like this so that you never miss an episode. This has been Wheels Off, and I'm Rhett Miller, encouraging you to create every day. Thanks, y'all.
Osiris.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effie Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Frates from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective, the only podcast you crank up to 11. Oh.